from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, how the 2016 election is affecting your personal relationships. The latest Huffington Post YouGov poll finds nearly half of respondents have gotten into a fight over the presidential election with a friend, family member, or coworker this year. With a divisive election involving two historically unpopular presidential candidates, it's no surprise this election is stoking intense political rifts. We hear your stories and get advice from a panel that we've assembled to tackle your questions about handling political differences in personal relationships. Join us next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Election years are tough, particularly on family members or friends at different ends of the political spectrum. This year's presidential campaign, with its personal attacks and accusations of misogyny and racial bigotry, has become for many a deeply stressful and emotional experience. Small wonder people are reporting fears that this election could fundamentally change their relationships with certain family members or close friends. After sharing who you plan to vote for, have family members implied you're no longer welcome under their roof? Have you entertained the idea of severing family ties? In this hour of Forum, we'll learn why this election has been so hard on some of our relationships and what can be done to keep the peace. And we want to hear from you. How has the election affected your personal relationships? And I want to give out the number now. That's 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. You can also email your comments to forum at kqed.org, post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook or on Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. Let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. Dennis Tersch is a psychologist and author of The Compassionate Mind Guide to Overcoming Anxiety. Good morning, Dennis Tersch.
Good morning, Mina. Thank you for having me today.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And thanks also to Amy Dickinson. She is author of the syndicated advice column Ask Amy. She's a panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and a frequent contributor to All Things Considered. She's also the author of the forthcoming memoir Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things, coming out this spring. Good morning, Amy Dickinson.
Hi, Mina.
Have you been getting a lot of requests for advice on how to deal with this election?
Oy. Yeah. And actually, I just ran a really good, I think a very sort of typical question this week, and have been flooded with replies. The question was from a woman who described herself as a liberal. She had been married for 3 years to a man she loves very much. She describes him as a conservative. And according to her, she feels that he seems to have changed over the course of this election cycle, and she's wondering if she can stay with him.
Amy Dickinson, I went to your website and saw that letter. It was, you're right, the one that you ran right there on the homepage. And I was surprised by your response, because you were also surprised by your own response, which was to basically say, stop talking about the presidential election until after it's over.
Listen, I never ever would have thought that I would say you need total avoidance and blackout. Like, this is not how couples are supposed to work things out. And yet, in my own household, I found myself in a similar situation, although I think I'm more mature than the person who wrote into me. And my husband and I, he is very politically engaged. I am very, very interested in it, although less engaged. I'm more interested in the media. And what I found was that he loves to talk politics and argue about politics. And as a Republican, as his candidates sort of one after another dropped out, he found himself with less man standing. And I couldn't bear it. And so what we did was, we have a total news blackout in our household. And we have not discussed it, not one word, for 6 weeks.
And what has been the effect of that? Has it helped?
Total peace, honestly. I mean, for the debates, I went one place, he went another place. you know, we're both just actively engaging with other people. But the problem is he loves to talk and argue, and I feel like these discussions and arguments, to me it felt like fighting.
Dennis Tersh, have you found yourself giving similar advice to your clients and being surprised as well that it's come to that?
Absolutely. And I really resonate with what Amy was saying here. This election is triggering things for people that's very different from a lot of elections, because it's bringing people more in contact with intense threat-based emotions like anger and anxiety. I mean, that's always a part of the political landscape, but it's so pronounced here. And some of the issues that are coming forward are so personal, and they cut along fundamental ethical lines and fundamental sort of dimensions of how a person is defined. So it's far more challenging, and more than in any other election, any other presidential election I've dealt with, people are coming in, you know, really troubled, and not just by the conflicts with the family members, but by a sort of an ambient sense of looming threat that shows up with what's going on. And it's really difficult to negotiate that in interpersonal relationships, because we're talking about deep values. I love the idea, when people can, of drawing the kind of boundaries that Amy's describing. You know, like sort of if there's two individuals who can do that effectively, and that's certainly one of the strategies to consider.
I want to go now to Jennifer Conte. She's a Bay Area OBGYN, because she had a pact like this with her dad that she wrote about for Slate. Jennifer Conte, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thanks so much for joining us. You wrote about how you did have a pact with your dad not to talk about politics, but that you decided to break that this time. Why?
Right. So I think, like many families in America right now, you know, my father and I have different politics, and we've sort of always had this unspoken agreement to just sort of not talk about this, and that's fine, you know, to maintain the harmony in the relationship. But all of this sort of changed, you know, a week or so ago, when this video of Donald Trump talking so candidly about sexual assault came out. And that's because in my own life, there have been a couple of times, actually, where I have experienced something similar, some similar form of sexual assault. And my father, a very loving man, he's, you know, was the person who was right at the forefront of supporting me and really helping me through that. And so I thought, maybe if I sort of reached out to him and tried to get him to see this situation through this lens, maybe then it would sort of change his mind. He's a very staunch Republican. Maybe he would not vote for Trump in this situation. And it didn't work, unfortunately. He says that there were a lot of other salient issues, like the economy, that were just more pressing than this.
Well, first, I'm very sorry that you experienced sexual assault. And it was interesting. Yeah. You published your email exchange with your dad on Slate. And it was interesting because he was drawing this distinction between words that he said Trump was saying and the fact that he didn't seem to believe that Trump had ever acted on those words.
Right. Yeah. I think that it's, you know, not just him. A lot of people are really quick to jump to this conclusion that words are just words. They don't matter. But especially when you're talking about things like sexual assault, they do matter. And, you're talking about the person who's vying for this position of, you know, potentially most powerful person in the world, certainly in our country. And to say things like this, you know, it isn't just locker room talk or boys talk. It really is condoning this culture of disrespecting half of the citizens in our country.
And what was it like for you not to be able to change your father's mind despite your personal experiences?
Disappointing. You know, it was disappointing. It was hurtful, because I thought I was really reaching out on this deeper level that connected us both, that we had both personally had this, you know, experience with, and it had negatively affected, our family or someone that he cared and loved about. So it was hard. It was challenging.
Is your relationship different? Has it changed your relationship with your father? Or how you see
it? I wouldn't say that it's changed the relationship. This is a loving, caring man that I, you know, love deeply and will always love deeply. But what it has done is sort of opened up my eyes to this bigger picture, this idea that a lot of people think, well, because I love and care about my mother, my sister, my daughter, that means that I love and care about or respect women. And that's not true. You know, to say that you love or respect a woman because there are women in your life that you care about and care for is not the same thing as respecting women as human beings. And so I think there's this sort of underlying misogyny that that we don't talk about and that a lot of people aren't willing to acknowledge even in their own selves.
Well, Jennifer Conti, I want to thank you for talking with us this morning.
Yeah,
and sharing
no problem.
Your story. Jennifer Conti, she's a Bay Area OBGYN who wrote to her father to try to change his mind about voting for Trump. And we are getting a lot of other stories and a lot of calls. Let me go to a couple right now. I want to start with Emily in San Francisco. Hi, Emily. Hi, Emily. Are you there? It seems like we may have lost our connection to Emily. Let's go instead to Stuart in Napa. Hi, Stuart. Again, it sounds like we are not able to get folks in at the moment. Please hang on. We will try to get those calls through as soon as possible. Amy Dickinson, as you're listening to Jennifer Conti tell her story about her father, what strikes you?
Two things strike me in both what Dennis said and Jennifer. And this absolutely showed up in my response, in the responses I received from readers to my Q&A. We are all affected by what happened in our childhoods. And I heard from more people who said, I watched my parents argue like cats and dogs every 4 years. They've been married for 65 years. They just did it well. They loved each other through it. It was really great to see that. I'm not afraid of that. And I love that. I just think it's an important reminder for parents. Our children are watching us navigate this. And so we – but then the second thing is I heard from so many women who said of the Q&A with the woman saying, my husband is very conservative. I don't know what I think about him now, she said. Many women responded, she should just leave him. And I thought – that is not really what marriage, you know, like that's not how you do marriage. You don't just leave people over an election. I mean, frankly, I've lost a couple of or strained a couple of friendships. But I think when you marry someone and you share your children together, your values, I mean, there are deeper values, I think, than this election is exposing.
And Dennis Tersh, before we went to Jennifer, you were bringing out a lot of the things that could be provoking or driving the intensity of the arguments or conversations between people who are political opposites. And you were talking about fear and anger. And I was wondering if you could explain what roles they play in the way that we engage.
Yes, this is very important. And on one level, what Jennifer was saying was very moving to me because it's her own individual personal experience. That was very painful and very brave and vulnerable for her to bring forward. On another level, it's very moving to me because it's a nearly universal experience for women in our culture and probably in global culture. So what this election is bringing us face to face with are some very powerful feelings of what it's like to face misogyny, to face emotional memories of actual abuse, to hear someone who has admitted abusing women then say out loud that those women were too ugly to abuse. So perhaps he wouldn't have done that. Now, whatever the political stance on that individual, on Donald, that's going to be really activating for people. You know, and what's important, I was really struck as Amy was talking about, what do we value in relationships, those deeper values? Well, you don't walk away from relationships necessarily if they're real relationships and enduring relationships when there's tough stuff. And you don't necessarily shut down, although that can be a reasonable strategy to have some boundaries. We need in our intimate relationships to feel socially safe and connected and to deal with real conflicts. So what you would think would be helpful is beyond the politics for a husband and a wife or a father and a daughter or even friends to be able to talk about the powerful emotions and powerful motives that are involved. Our minds and our behaviors are very organized by different motives. If we're caregiving and we feel warm and socially safe, our behavior and our thinking is going to be very different than if we feel threatened and we feel angry. Now, unfortunately, when people identify with political tribes, their old brain, their old kind of threat-based brain comes in, and they will cling to that threat-based processing. My tribe has to beat your tribe. And in fact, we know there's research that when someone's angry, they'll cling to their beliefs even more if their beliefs are disproven. This is why, you know, news channels will have people so incensed, you know, Fox News and such, when they're defending a position, because people ignore the fact. Threat-based emotions like anger and anxiety narrow our attention and they narrow our range of available behaviors. So the challenge with our loved ones is to slow down, to remember our compassionate, caring motivation, to be able to feel sufficiently socially safe together that we can talk about how we're being affected by each other's words and opinions, regardless of who's right or who's wrong in these kind of giant, you know, political figures. You know, the first thing for the preservation of our relationships is when you speak this way, this is how it's affecting me.
I wonder if a caller that we have on the line, which I'm glad he stayed on, Stuart in Napa, can speak to this. Stuart, how are you dealing with different views about politics in your family? Hi, Stuart, are you there? It looks like we may have lost.
Hello, are you?
Stuart, let's go to Sarah. Is this Sarah in Santa Rosa?
Yes, hi, this is Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. I'm so glad to hear your voice. That lets me know that our phone lines are back up and running again. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes, I've really appreciated hearing the advice so far on the show about maybe keeping politics off the table when there's disagreement, and the last comment about having more compassion. But I've always been more socially progressive, and my husband apparently subscribes to every alt-right conspiracy theory you can imagine. And now with, you know, all the rise of this to the mainstream level of media play, the thing I have a tough time with is that I find a lot of these alt-right conspiracy theories so odious and distasteful that, I mean, I stay together with my husband because we believe in the permanency of marriage and wanting to be there for the kids. But I don't know how I can tolerate looking at this person who believes things I find so distasteful. I would love to have some advice on, I mean, this has been an ongoing question for me for the past 10 years. Like, what do I do with these feelings and beliefs?
Sarah, thanks. It sounds like distasteful is a word being used to describe a very deep emotion, Amy Dickinson.
Well, and also it sounds from her description as if her husband's belief system is pretty extreme. And honestly, I think that is a huge, huge challenge, because I think that some of these very extremist views do speak to deeper values. This is not just somebody who is voting for Donald Trump because of the economy. You know, this is somebody who has embraced perhaps some of the deeper, darker aspects of Donald Trump that turned so many other Republicans off. So I don't know. I'm going to kick it over to Dennis.
I understand that we have Nick Swatek on the line, who has a relationship with his stepdaughter and her husband where they have dinner together at least once a week, and they totally disagree because, Nick Swatek, you live in Marin and you're a Trump supporter, right?
Yes, I am.
So what have those dinner parties become like for you?
Well, that and, you know, many, let's say when we have a group dinner, I have to listen to that, and I have cogent views. I have a college education. I have two degrees. I have a master's degree. I read the newspaper every day. I read Thomas Sowell.
And Nick Swiatek, why do you feel a need to say that? Do you feel like people assume that you're not educated?
That my views aren't worth listening to. It's you get tired of hearing, oh, that's not true. And you go, well, okay. And so you're dismissed. So it gets uncomfortable after years and years. I mean, this has been going on for a while. And all right, my views are wrong, and my source of data of information is not true. And after a while, you get tired of it, and you feel dismissed. To assume a base motives to my opinion it rather upsets me, and. But as in one case, in a dinner at a lovely restaurant, two people commented on Hillary Clinton about deplorables and said it. She shouldn't have said 50%. She should have said 100%. Mm. Well, I looked at my wife. My wife, who I found out last night, is not a Trump supporter. She's just not exactly a Hillary supporter. I looked at her. She looked at me and shook her head no. And so I had to stay quiet while people mocked, anyone who supports Trump as racist and sexist, is a bit upsetting.
Sure.
And so at this point, when I'm at dinner with liberal people, I try to stay calm, stay out of politics. When they bring it up, I try to bring up a point. If I'm cut off once or dismissed once, I just stop talking. And I obviously don't enjoy being at those dinners.
What's your relationship like with your stepdaughter now?
Oh, it's great.
So you're continuing to have your dinners?
Oh, yeah. But I just can't venture into politics. I just can't. I mean, and she's not bad, to be honest, and he's not bad. It's their friends at the dinner parties, and it's continuous. It's nonstop. And think about that. I mean, being dismissed out of hand.
Right. It sounds like there's a very strong sense of feeling disrespected through this election process.
Well, I think there's cogent arguments on both sides of the issues, and we just have a disagreement. Let us say big government is the solution to the problem. Maybe it's not. There's cogent arguments against that.
Well, Nick Swiatek of Marin County, a Trump supporter, thanks so much for talking with us. And I want to hear from our listeners, other listeners as well. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Again, 866-733-6786. We're discussing how talking politics with family and friends this election season has felt downright treacherous, and we get advice from a panel. More after the break. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're discussing how this presidential election is affecting your personal relationships and getting advice from folks about how to handle our political differences to maintain the peace in our relationships with Amy Dickinson. She's author of the syndicated advice column Ask Amy and a frequent guest on NPR. And we're also talking with Dennis Tursch, a psychologist and author of The Compassionate Mind Guide to Overcoming Anxiety. And Dennis Tursch, just before I go to phone calls, I do want to just talk about what Nick Swiatek was saying, the Marin resident who is a Trump supporter. One of the things that I found interesting about this election is that it feels like you can no longer really talk about your policy differences or hold certain views without it getting very personal and feeling like personal attacks, as he's felt in terms of disrespect. Have you found that as well?
Yes, and I think it's helpful for us to draw this distinction between someone's political position and the way they're treating people. And this is one of the problems, at the risk of sounding a little bit too much to the left to be completely objective, one of the choices that Donald Trump's made is to openly be hostile about things. This is his personal style. You know, this person's disgusting, this person's a pig, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the problems with that is that becomes an okay way to speak. And it's also one of the problems with the comment about the deplorables being out there. So that's not how we wish to really speak to each other in healthy relationships, in that kind of a condemning and condescending way. And I think we don't really need to. You know, you can have a healthy relationship with someone with political differences, and it's okay in a boundaried way to call out when someone's being derisive and unfair.
You're saying, Dennis Church, that the communication in this campaign is shifting norms or acceptable speech.
Yeah. People watch. They see those norms, and then that becomes okay. That descent of the dialogue into threat-based, hostile, like a competition, like a fight. And that's not a healthy norm. We know that that will lead to problems for people in relationships. So part of our challenge is to retain our dignity and our values and our ability to coexist and communicate with each other with strength of our ideas, but with kindness.
Well, Stuart in Napa, thanks for waiting.
Thank you so much for taking my call today. Can you guys hear me okay?
We can now.
Okay, great. Listen, I come from a family that's from Southern and Northern California, the leftist of liberals and the rightest of Republicans. And all I can say is that when I listen to people talk about, well, they've resolved not to talk about it because it's too divisive and it brings up too much emotion. We actually talked about it at the very beginning and said, you know, should we talk about it or should we not talk about it? And we've learned so much about each other, about our values and about what we both, you know, consider important and, you know, how we want to see our country run. When it comes down to issues that Trump talks about and Hillary talks about, we try and weigh the gravity of each of the things and really put it through the real test. Is this something real that affects like my life and what we do and as a family and as friendships? And would we want to let it get in between us, or would we want to talk about the differences that it shows in both of us as people and then try and celebrate those differences? So I would advocate for people not to try and sweep things under the rug, but at these most critical junctures of our, you know, our country and decision making and emotions and politics and everything that's out there, to try and talk to other people and discuss the views, especially those people that are on the far side. Well, for example, my Uncle Bob is the most right-wing Republican ever, Newport Beach, amazingly, and I am the most left-wing conservative, but we go to baseball games together. So we try and do things that we both enjoy that are non-political, and then while we're talking about, you know, are the Dodgers going to win or should the Giants be there, we're able to focus back on politics a little bit and not make it so heavy.
Well, Stuart, thanks so much for sharing that story. And you're not alone. A listener writes, our politics reveal our values. And the more passionate we become about politics, the more our friends and loved ones react to our value system. The notion that we should stop talking politics for fear of having to engage in honest and difficult decisions is actually antithetical to the open and nurturing relationships we should be having with our friends and loved ones. And Jay writes, choosing to listen and holding off on judgment and reacting can give us a chance to understand the concerns that others have and often realize that we actually share many of the same concerns. Amy Dickinson, what's your response to folks who are saying that more talking has helped them?
Well, I think that's great. And I will also say, I want to echo the idea that certainly for me personally, entering into a marriage with somebody whose ideals are exactly the same as mine, whose values are the same as mine, but his opinions are very different from mine. And he's from a huge family of 13 children. And so I like plunged into this giant family, and it's been great. It's actually been very, very, very good for me. I did get to a point where I just personally could no longer engage. I watched all of the Republican debates, again, you know, involving all of the many 9 or 12 candidates very peacefully. Once it was winnowed down to this one candidate, I found it harder and harder to participate. And so, yes, I definitely chose to we mutually decided not to discuss it. But in general, I think it's good. And you know, one thing I've noticed also, this was brought up in a couple of calls. There's nothing quite as closed-minded as an open-minded liberal person. You know, it's sort of like they're all about everybody's opinions except people who disagree with them. Honestly, I genuinely believe that. I'm sitting here in a college town where people, it's like an echo chamber. And I totally identified with the man who said, he ends up in these, you know, dinners and he just has to sit there and shut his mouth, you know?
Well, Kimmy writes, simply not talking about politics makes me anxious because I'm not sure how I feel about having men actively in my daughter's life that could consider sexual assault and harassment acceptable. Sean writes, as someone who plans to vote socialist this fall, I've gotten hate from both Trump supporters and my friends who are Clinton supporters. I basically isolated myself from them until the election is over. That's the only way to get by. Yes, certainly we've been talking about Trump and Clinton, but also folks have talked, Bernie Sanders supporters have felt concerned about, you know, being treated poorly because they want to hold true to Bernie Sanders, or folks who were Bernie Sanders supporters are feeling heat from them as if they're sellouts because they're voting Hillary Clinton. So there is a lot of it going around on all parts of the political continuum. I want to go next to Robert in Fairfield. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Sure, go ahead.
So I'm an active military member. I won't go into any more details than that. I was deployed for most of 2016, it was interesting. Most military members, as you guys are probably aware, are very conservative in their views. So it was a very interesting balancing act to have the election going on while we were all deployed together, because you're spending every day together in very close quarters. So learning to navigate the political spectrum kind of became a balancing act that we all had to master out of necessity, because it was more of like a survival thing. You couldn't piss off the people you were working with every day.
So what advice then do you have for folks?
It was interesting, because I consider myself like a liberal conservative. And as the debates wore on, the Republican debates, more and more mainstream Republicans were dropping out, our conversations would get more and more directed towards like Trump's rhetoric. And, with so many active duty military members, the national security thing and the Benghazi situation, I won't go into any details on those, but those mattered, and no one wanted to feel, as the man wrote earlier, spoke earlier, no one wants to feel like their opinion doesn't matter. And I feel like with most Trump supporters, a lot of them, I feel like, are still conservatives that are kind of looking for the silver lining on a voting for a conservative, and they're been conservatives their whole lives. And I think most liberals need to kind of take a step back and realize that. I don't believe all Trump supporters are hateful people who are out to destroy the United States and will rebel against us when the election comes, if Trump doesn't win.
Well, Robert, thanks for that. I think what you're hitting on is something important, Dennis Tursh, which is he starts with the idea that yes, your opinion does matter.
Yeah, I think it's very, very important. And, you know, you're reminding me, several of these points are reminding me of the literature on what makes a successful marriage and what leads to marriages ending. So, you know, we know from John Gottman's research that there are communication styles, he calls them the four horsemen of the apocalypse, four ways that people speak to each other, that if couples regularly fight that way, 95% of the time, they'll get a divorce. Interestingly, there's no correlation with how often they fight and whether or not they get a divorce. It's whether they fight using contempt, unfair criticism, emotional cutoffs, and defensiveness. And there's a lot more to it if we were to unpack it.
Sure.
But so the main thing here is mutual respect, compassion, and slowing down and being in that kind of a headset. Your opinions do matter. The problem and some of the responsibility for this does have to be laid at the 24-hour news channels, and to some extent the movement, to the extremes on the left and the right, but particularly the extreme on the right. When the rhetoric and the invectives and the violent speech gets that intense, it's going to have an influence on culture and relationships. So each of us has a personal responsibility to tend our own garden.
Well, Amy Dickinson, what about, though, when, as Mark writes, what if you discover in the course of an election that your spouse is a racist or bigot? So, you know, do we start with your opinion matters?
No. And actually, the previous caller who described her her husband of 10 years as being, as I interpreted it, extremist alt-right, that I think is a huge problem. And I don't know, I genuinely believe that I think we may all know somebody who we feel has sort of gone
sort of crossed a line.
Crossed the line. And it's frankly, it's very disturbing. It's very disturbing. And if I discovered that my spouse was a racist or bigot, I would have a, like a – because that's a core value. Like, I'd have a big problem with that.
And how would you navigate it?
You know, I think I would have to really have a series of – I would wait till after the election, and I would have a series of very, very serious sort of come-to-Jesus conversations about it.
Well, another listener asks, how should we respond when someone cites information that is false? It's hard to have civil conversations when you don't agree on facts or news sources. Amy Dickinson, do you want to respond to this?
Well, I was just thinking of Donald Trump. Wrong. You know, we taped Wait, Don't Tell Me last night. There was a lot of, you know, interrupting. Wrong. No, that's the whole thing. It's like you – when we are consuming media that is biased in quotes and literally serving out different facts, and if your media is so narrow, it's impossible. I mean, we are all fact-checking each other, standing there with our smartphones and trying to fact-check each other. It's genuinely – if you can't find any common ground, it's a problem.
And we're talking with Amy Dickinson, author of the syndicated advice column Ask Amy, and Dennis Ter. She's a psychologist and author of the book The Compassionate Mind Guide to Overcoming Anxiety. We're getting their thoughts on how to discuss this election if it's affecting your relationships. And let's go now to Anirvan in Fremont.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a great fan of the show, by the way. So, you know, I want to talk about two relations. So one is with my parents, and my parents are originally from India, and they grew up in India. And they went through, you know, personally, they went through the partition of, you know, India into India and Pakistan. And, you know, they faced things, they faced situations, they went through a lot of turmoil in their lives. So they hold a strong grudge against Pakistan, and because of the communal violences and everything at that time, they also hold a strong grudge against Muslims in general, right? However, they're, you know, very well educated. Both my parents have master's degrees, and, you know, they're a teacher. My mom was a teacher, and so on. So, you know, I can't. So they. By the way, the rhetoric of Trump resonates very well with them, right? The extreme views on Islam and Muslims. However, you know, I would have never imagined that they would overlook any of the other issues, right? I mean, the his views against women, I mean, his narcissism, whatever. But they still support Trump. And I can't fathom myself. And I grew up in a pretty liberal household, except that, you know, one extreme view. So that's one example. The other example is with a lot of my friends. You know, I'm here in Silicon Valley. And, you know, the tax question always is a big topic because, you know, the more taxes, the taxes have been there raised, that affects a lot of folks here. And as a result, they support Trump. Now, again, the same conversation I have, hey, how can you overlook the tape? How can you overlook, you know, all of those comments and, you know, his, you know, look at him, his track record. So, you know, my point is, I think a lot of folks feel very strongly or align very strongly to one aspect of a candidate, and it could be Trump or Clinton, but then they tend to overlook the whole package. I mean, when somebody is becoming president, it's not, they're not just concerned about one part of it. It's,
right. And Nirvan, I think you make a good point, and we're getting it. And also Nirvan is talking about seeing people and that experience that we're hearing from other folks of, you're not who I thought you were. Virginia Martinez, thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to express that I was sexually assaulted at the age of 5 and have had unfortunately, multiple different sexual assaults throughout my life. I grew up in a small town in Ohio in the 60s and 70s and 80s. I sought out treatment. I knew something was wrong. And I was constantly just downplayed, well, at least you weren't raped, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I just never really had a voice. I moved to California, finally found amazing therapists, doctors, treatments, all kinds of wonderful things. But the thing about why I'm sharing this is the fact that with Donald Trump, who I feel is kind of like an archetype of that generation of men, that it's kind of a blessing in disguise, because I'm shocked but overwhelmed, like a tidal wave of reinforcement, because he publicly said what he does to women, and hearing that's sexual assault, that's against the law, that's a violation, and hearing all of these men, just multiple men saying, that is wrong, that is not okay, this is horrible. And it's just wonderful, because I've never gotten validation. I've gotten, no, it's all in your head, you should have done this, you know, victim blaming.
Well,
and
Virginia,
I'm just saying that it's a kind of a blessing in disguise, in that sense that all of a sudden this is coming to the foreground. And I just, for me, I'm kind of looking at the other side in the sense of, like I said, a blessing in disguise.
Well, Virginia, thanks so much for sharing that story. And I'm so glad to find that you found something validating in this experience. And thanks for sharing what is a very difficult experience. And what I like about what Virginia is saying, Dennis Tersch, is also that one of the strategies that I read in terms of helping to relieve the stress that one might be feeling in this election, which can then lend itself to arguments, right, is to stop from seeing everything that happens as a total catastrophe or in the most negative way possible?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the techniques we use very often is to imagine that there was a very good friend, a supportive friend, but also a very strong friend who had your back, and they were going to give you some advice about this from a place of strength. And what would they say? I mean, what Virginia is describing is, it's a really difficult experience. In some ways, it was validating, because she heard these other men who were more supportive and sort of had a broader perspective. But I want to emphasize here that when we talk about being able to find a way to speak and respecting each other's views and all this, that doesn't mean sacrificing your own. And there are some things that have come up in this election that require speaking truth to power and require asserting yourself. And it can be very empowering and actually very soothing to be in an authoritative, strong place of kindness and dignity.
And
so,
let's get to some more calls and comments. Suzanne writes, I'm having trouble with my parents, who are strong Trump supporters, Fox News watchers, etc. I don't want to go visit them. This is because their choice is supporting racism, sexism, and xenophobia. I literally feel sick to my stomach that my parents have become like this. When I was young, they were McCarthy Democrats. Karen says, my mother has been a staunch Republican for decades, but she said she just doesn't know if she can bring herself to vote for Trump. She feels he's unfit for office and that she may abstain from casting a presidential vote altogether. I've developed an empathy for those Republicans who've been handed a truly sour apple and had their wind taken from their sails. How terribly sad and un-American. And Brian writes, it's indicative of our times that so-called relationship experts on the radio advise people to break off communication. For those folks who really want to communicate through these differences, Amy Dickinson, what are some of the strategies? I've been hearing a few throughout as we've been talking, you know, empathy, respecting each other's differences, trying to be aware of our emotional states, so because they can end up, you know, entrenching us, I guess, in our positions. What other advice do you have?
Well, I think anchoring to your common core values, finding common ground. Dennis and a couple of other callers made, I think, a great suggestion, which is certainly works for people, which is to slow things down. Take a breath. You know, really slow it down. Take a break. Take a breath. I feel a little self-conscious as somebody who has definitely found that avoidance is working for me. I feel alone here. But you know, I think it's incumbent on each of us to, like, find a technique. The goal is to stay in the relationship. And how can you? You know? And there are ways.
And Dennis, I feel like I've also heard you saying that we should somewhat limit our media intake on this election. I've even seen the American Psychological Association, I think, put a number on it, like 20 to 30 minutes a day.
Yeah, I'm more like 20, 30 hours a day myself. But I think what Amy was saying is that, you know, Amy, I'm not so sure that's avoidance. I think it's consensual, it's cooperative, and it's boundaried that you and your husband have agreed to have this kind of place of non-engagement around this.
Well, there you go, Amy. You're not alone.
Thank you. I validate. And I want to emphasize, we had a conversation about it. It was an agreement. It wasn't just like, go to your corner, sweep it under the rug. It was like, how can we get through the next several weeks peacefully? And for two people, certainly me, hooked on the media, to not consume any media at home has been kind of great.
Well, Devin in Warner Robins, Georgia, what's been your experience?
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Hey, very good. First, Miss, it's Dickinson, correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, well, first, I'm with you. I wish that avoidance was more possible in my situation. So for me, and I feel like a lot of young people anyways, are more and more leaning, third party, libertarian, undecided. And for myself, I come from a divorced family where one half is staunch, staunch conservative, the other side, super liberal. And I often find myself having to actually play moderator between these people and having to put shoes on, on other people's feet and saying, look, go stand in these, look at this point of view. Don't make it awkward for the whole dadgum family, over your unwillingness to see things from another perspective.
Well, Devin, thanks for sharing that. I bet folks with those kinds of skills are being called upon quite a bit at this time. Let's go next to Michelle in San Jose. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. I just had a question for you guys. I think it's great that we're talking about family and discussing these within our inner circle, but it's really surprising how much we can let go when it comes to our inner circle. We can put a blind eye to it. My question for you guys is, I think Trump has changed our society in a way that we haven't noticed yet, but I think he has brought up a lot of good or bad, however we want to look at it, these views of whether it's white power or whatever it is, and they're a lot more vocal. So where do we go from here? I think our society has definitely changed.
Michelle,
it's not
thanks.
Just about our inner circle.
Michelle, thanks. Who'd like to take that? Dennis Sturge?
Well, you know, here's the good news and the bad news. It's not about Donald Trump. These are archetypal, universal forces that show up inside ourselves and inside our societies. And when people's minds and behaviors, or society's minds or behaviors, are organized by their grievances, they're going to want to put forcefulness and aggression forward. And part of the challenge for societies and individuals is to balance that anger with wisdom and compassion.
Dennis, I think you're also hitting on the sense of maybe it would be helpful if, when we're talking with the individual person, that we're not holding that person entirely accountable for something that's a broader systemic issue.
Yeah, I mean, just briefly, one of my closest friends is a major Tea Party Republican figure who ran for Senate in New Jersey. His name's Steve Lonning. He's my uncle. He's a really good friend. And we coexist, and we have intense discussions sometimes. But when one or the other of us steps over a line in terms of interpersonal respect, we call it out. You know, certain things just aren't okay. So we can stay inside a respectful dialogue. And compassion and kindness are not submissive. You know, we don't have to take bad behavior, and we don't have to put up with the things that we would just rather respectfully disengage from.
B writes, what I find hard is that this isn't politics as usual. This election is about morality. This is not just Republicans versus Democrats. This is a very disturbed personality running for president. I could not be close to somebody who would vote for Trump, because to me it is like voting for a dictator, like going back in time to the days of Hitler. Emily in San Francisco, go ahead.
Hi, yes. So I, like many of the other callers, just really disagree with my father. He's a Republican, not a Trump supporter, I will say. He doesn't know what he's going to do. I'm a Democrat, so is my husband, so is my brother. And it's just been really hard for us for the last 10 years. Listening to my father with diatribes, and it's never really quite a conversation. And so finally, like a lot of people, we've just said, you know, we're not going to talk about it. But that's kind of leaving me feeling a little, you know, uneasy and just fake because, you know, I love my father. I respect him, but I just don't understand how he can have these viewpoints. And I've just come to embrace the idea that we're talking about is just having compassion for him and realizing why he has those beliefs. For example, my father was a business executive and has been out of work for several years. And he really believes that white men are being discriminated against in this country.
And you've tried to have compassion for that view. Emily, I'm so sorry to cut you off, but we are approaching the end of the show. But I do want to echo what you're saying in Tony's comment, which is perhaps this was already said, but I have friends whose views I know are different. We just say, let's agree to disagree. That statement is respectful and sets aside the matters we know we won't agree on. The other strategy I've heard is that go out and vote because then you can feel like you are able to exercise your perspective in a way that isn't at conflict with anyone else. So that might be a good way to end, and a reminder also that the deadline to register to vote in California is Monday. Well, Amy Dickinson of the syndicated advice column Ask Amy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, Dennis Tersh, psychologist and author of The Compassionate Mind Guide to Overcoming Anxiety.
Thanks so much.
There's more of Forum after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.